Good morning. Yes, I am very much involved and have been very much involved with licensing and certification of soil scientists since we first started it in the early 90s. I should also mention that I am a soil physicist. I've been one of the soil physics members of CSSC, the Council of Soil Science Examiners, which writes those exams, for a long, long time. But I will get into that a little bit more. So I do have a soft spot for soil physics, and we try to make sure that we're looking at those things when we write exams. But I want to talk today about using what we call the state of the practice to teach soil physics. And I think I'm probably preaching to the choir here, but take the message with you anyways. So what am I going to cover? I'm going to cover a little bit about student perceptions and teaching challenges, and I think some of you have noted that. Some of you have been very kind in saying that, you know, some of your students are very excited, but I think a lot of us would agree there's a lot of students out there that aren't excited at all about taking soil physics. I want to talk a little bit about employer needs, and I'm going to draw some on a survey that the Soil Science Society of America just did, and I was on the committee that looked at that survey, and we presented a paper yesterday afternoon. So I'm going to bring in some of the things that employers are looking for, and it might surprise you as to what exactly they are citing as the most needed skills. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about the Soil Science Society of America and the performance objectives that go along with these licensing and certification exams, and how those might be used as we look at teaching soil physics as to what the employers are looking for and what these exams are testing for. So, yes, this is the negative side, and I figured when I put this in here, either you're going to kick me out of this room or you are going to laugh about some of these things. Hopefully you're going to laugh. So what do we generally hear when we tell our students that, well, we'd like you to take soil physics? Well, a lot of times you get the I don't wanna syndrome because they think it's too hard and they're not going to have any fun. Too much work. Then there's the gulp, oh my God, there's a lab. I don't want to do a lab. The professor's too hard. Most soil physics professors tend to carry that reputation. Isn't there anything else I can put on my schedule that's going to be in that same time slot so that I really don't have to take that soil physics class? But I think one of the things that starts coming through if you listen to these students is they really want to know, what am I going to gain from taking soil physics seriously? And I think that's sometimes where we as professors tend to fall down a little bit and not really telling them what it is they're going to gain. And hopefully talking about some of the licensing and certification and what the employers are looking for can help us get there a little bit better. So, we don't usually find students waitlisted for soil physics courses, and I'm mainly talking, well, our graduate level courses, as Toby was saying, don't tend to fill up, and our undergraduate courses definitely aren't waitlisted. And students tend to come in with this preconceived notion of, it's going to be hard, I don't think I'm going to like it, and I don't really want to be here. So you're almost starting backwards when you're in the first day of class and trying to convince the students that, yeah, this is going to be a good class. So things that we tend to do, the course is required, oh, it won't be that bad, just get through it. It'll round out your education. You know, these are things that students are hearing which really aren't helpful because you start to sound like their parents. So how often then do we actually talk about how the soil physical environment is integral to understanding all the other processes in soil science, or all the other processes in watershed science, or any other types of things that you want to think about bringing up. Relate it to their future careers. Provide a context that provides meaning and significance to the student. I think that's sometimes where we don't tend to get there. So employer expectations, and I can talk from this because I did something different after my PhD. I went and did environmental consulting for 16 years. And 3 years ago, I made the decision to come back to academia. So a lot of times will go back to my employer status and come at things from that way. So on the job expectations, are they different from what's taught in the classroom? Well, information from employers tells us, yeah, those expectations are different. Soil physics and soil classification were the two top skills that came out of that survey from SSSA that employers are looking for. Does that surprise you? It's because of who we're competing with out there. We're competing with the engineers and geologists. And so when our consulting employers are coming back at us, they're saying, we need people that understand soil physics. We need people that understand soil classification. Those are the top two things that employers are telling us. Some of the other things that the employer survey was telling us, and things that I would wholeheartedly agree with, having been in the employer spot, is that when we're hiring people out of college, we're missing the link to real issues and problems. And I've been listening to people talk today, that we're starting to go there, but I think generally we don't tend to do that. So it's a missing link. Field experience. One of the things I heard over and over from employers that our students are missing is, how do we go out in the field? How do we synthesize information that we're seeing out there? And again, soil scientists are competitive and are competing with engineers and geologists and land surveyors, septic system designers, things like that. So we need to pay attention to what we're teaching them and how we're telling them to apply it, and giving them that extra added ability to do that within our education system. So let me go back and sort of link this to the licensing and certification exams, and then the performance objectives. History. TSSSA in the early 90s put together an ad hoc committee to define the practice of soil science. I was on that. Aziz is sitting here today. He's been involved with this in the early years too. But those were the first performance objectives, as we decided this is what defines the practice of soil science. And then in 1995, there was the formation of the Council of Soil Science Examiners. That is the group that actually writes those licensing and certification exams. By the way, those two exams are exactly the same. It just depends what state you're in as to whether you're getting licensed or certified. The exams started to be given in 1998. I think the first two licensing states back then were North Carolina and Minnesota. And so they were taking those exams, but there was also the certification portion, which is run through TSSSA, and those exams were being taken for certification purposes too. There's a fundamentals exam, and there's a professional practice exam. I am primarily speaking towards the fundamentals exam, which is something that students can take as early as their junior year. They can't get their initial title until they have a bachelor's degree, but this is more like what I'm talking about. The professional practice exam gets taken after you have 5 years of experience after graduation in the field. The thing I want you to remember when I talk about the performance objectives, that each exam question that the council writes has to be tied to a performance objective. So it makes it very easy for students to go look at performance objectives and understand what it is they're going to be examined on. So what about these performance objectives, or POs? They define the areas of soil science knowledge, and my next slide will show you what we've defined as the areas. They're updated every other year so that the state of the practice keeps updated. They're peer-reviewed, which means we don't take this little group and decide what the practice of soil science is and then put it out there for everybody to use. No, it goes out to a peer review that is this last time I think it went out to 762 soil scientists, and they're from across different disciplines in academia, government, and industry. So we're getting the breadth of soil scientists and what it is they think soil science is. So the POs in the fundamentals exam are divided into these different areas: soil chemistry and mineralogy, soil fertility, soil physics, soil classification, genesis, and morphology, soil biology and biochemistry, and our catch-all area of land use management, where we really look at synthesizing a lot of this information. In the 2007 version of the POs, which is online, and I'll give you the website in a little bit here, there's 45 POs that have to do with soil physics. They're broken down into these different categories. So physical properties, soil-water relationships, water movement, transport processes, soil temperature, soil gases, and engineering properties. these are the things that the Council of Soil Science Examiners, the people, and those are not the people that write the POs, there's an extra group that does that, and your peers have decided these are the major categories of soil physics that people should know if they're going to practice soil science. These are some examples that I just pulled out of the POs, and I said they're updated every other year, so the next exam is November 17th or 19th somewhere, it's coming up. But when that exam is done, what you'll see is the next set of the new POs will be posted probably in early December, and that's what people use to then study from for the exams that are coming up in 2010. So, examples. Explain how tillage practices affect soil bulk density and pore space. As I'm reading through these, what you're going to see is it's not calculate bulk density. There is a PO that says that. But a lot of what we try to get into these performance objectives is synthesizing that information. Understand how one thing affects the other. And I think I've heard a couple of people or a couple of speakers talk about that this morning. So we're on the same page. Explain how soil temperature affects the rate of microbial and chemical processes in soil. Relate soil morphological properties with relative rates of water movement through the soils. Describe how leaching potential differs between nitrate, nitrogen, and ammonium nitrogen in soils of different textures. Describe how soil compaction affects infiltration, permeability, bulk density, and thermal conductivity. And determine the direction of flow given soil water potentials. Somebody was just talking about how that's very difficult for students to do. But these are things or examples of what industry and academia and government have all said are important things for soil scientists to know. Granted, I'm focusing on soil physics here because we're all soil physics people, but the same thing is true for soil biology and soil fertility and soil chemistry and things like that. So again, soil science, soil physics, POs are defining the state of the practice. These are nationally based exams that are written from the POs. Remember, every exam question has to be linked to a PO. And POs are speaking directly to education. That would be most of us. It's trying to set a standard for knowledge, skills, and conduct. There's an ethics statement that goes along with licensing and certification. So that when employers are hiring people and they see that they've passed, the potential candidate for the job has passed an exam, they've hit a certain standard of the profession. And so I'm not trying to sell certification licensing exams to you. What I'm saying is there's a tool here that you could use in looking at the performance objectives to go back and look at what is the profession sort of expecting people to know. POs can be found on the OSSA website. That's the web address. If you forget that, you can go to soils.org. And when you get on the front page there, there's one of those headers that says certifications. Click on that, and then down the right-hand side of the page, you'll see something that says Council of Soil Science Examiners. If you click on that, that's where you will find the POs, both fundamental and professional practice listed. They're two different documents. They're free, so students can get them free, you can get them free. And one thing that I will leave you with is I'm not part of the council anymore, but I am a consultant for OSSA, so I still work on the exams. And so if you have comments or you see things that are missing in these POs that you would like to see in there, we would like to hear about it because we're always trying to improve what's going on. And with that, I will take any questions.
Thank you, Dawn. Comments or questions for Dawn? Dawn, on the website, is there like a study guide or something like that, or is it just the POs?
Yeah, there's a study guide for the fundamentals, and there's a study guide for the professional practice. And I just talked to a student from Auburn while I was watching the Packers get beat by the Vikings the other night. I'm from Wisconsin. But they were saying they just took the fundamentals exam, and I asked how the study guide was, and they thought it was okay. It wasn't a ringing endorsement, but they thought it was okay. We hear more complaints about the professional practice study guide. Okay. In fact, I get emails about it. We're trying to get them rewritten, and we're looking for volunteers to do that. So if you have a burning desire to write a study guide that Even if we do it in sections, that would be wonderful. So.
Okay. Other questions, comments? Okay, thank you, Doc. Okay, so last talk of the morning, I believe, right?